mental and behavioral traits can be contagious. And they suggested, like, if all of your friends are depressed, there's only a matter of time before maybe that rubs off on you.
That's so good that you said that, because I know, like, when I am in a space, I feel like I just, I feel, I put myself on the other end of the phone. I'm just like, I can imagine this sounding so nauseating hearing that. So then I choose.
Trauma response.
And so then I choose, and so I choose to just, you know, kind of just.
Let's sit on the couch. Let's talk it out. Come on, join the show. I'll tell you what I know.
Oh, talk about it.
It's the best podcast. Let's have a blast.
Mental Health Awareness Month is here. May is a time to raise awareness of those living with mental and behavioral health matters and to help reduce the stigma so many experience. You know, personally, I have been one who has and still processes mental health battles, mostly living in the anxiety department, and it's been challenging while rewarding when I reach the other side of what can be confusing, dark, and suppressive times. Last year, Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry dropped a book titled What Happened to You, going deep into the mental health arena, and we're here to talk about it. Today, I am joined on the healing couch with Char Jocelle.
Hi, Archie.
How are you?
I'm great.
I am so glad that you're here having this conversation with me. Reporter, correspondent, host, producer.
Award-winning journalist.
Award-winning journalist.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I never leave that out. I'm gonna pat my own back, okay?
Please do. You should. I want to talk to you because you actually was the influence for me to pick up this book here.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice to know.
From your conversation and just saying how, you know, coming out of 2020, getting into this book. But I want to start with, what has been your experience with mental health so far?
So my experience with mental health has been a very interesting one. I mean, all of ours, right?
Yeah.
But for me, you know, the essay I published at the beginning of the year for my birthday, it was confronting depression. Like my first time confronting like real diagnosable, and I'm saying real with air quotes because it's all so nuanced, but diagnosable depression was when I was 30, when I turned 30. Mm-hmm. And so when I talked to other people who were dealing with depression, most people were like, yeah, I have been dealing with depression since I was in seventh grade, mm-hmm. or dealing with depression since sophomore year of undergrad. And for me, there is not a time in my life that I can look back and really say that I felt depressed.
Yeah.
I had sad moments. And so I think grappling with, like, when you get certain, like, diagnosis, like, there's a freedom there because it's like, okay, finally, there's an answer to what I've been going through. I've been able to pinpoint it.
Yes.
But I also had to work tirelessly to release a lot of stigma, internalized stigma, that I didn't even know I was holding on to around certain things just to make sure, you know,
yeah.
that I'm healthy and have a sound mind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's real. I want to talk about the book. Let's talk about the book because it poses the idea of, I sound like Oprah when I said that, the idea of getting away from asking the question, what's wrong with you? To what happened to you?
Yes.
How did you receive that?
So I love that because oftentimes, you know, when we see just even the tiniest shifts in language, mm-hmm. we get different answers. And I think what happened to you is a question that can lay a bedrock as to almost corresponding with, are you okay?
Mm.
And I feel like it's safer for people, the way that lands on the ears, it's safer for people to answer. It just lands on the ears a bit differently.
Yeah.
Versus like, Archie, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Versus, you know, against, yeah. you know, Archie, what happened to
yeah.
you? And I think that this was an appropriate title because, as you know, as someone who is reading the book, it takes a deep dive into how our childhood is the root of all of this.
Yes.
And how we need community and how we have to literally work together, you know, to help ourselves to make sure that we're in healthy, conducive environments to overcome some of the traumas that were inflicted, you know, in childhood.
Like you said, the book highlights how our childhood trauma can, you know, show up in today and as we move and process as adults. How jarring was it for you to read that and kind of, you know, process that, how your parents responded to you, mm-hmm. or whatever you needed is how you walk throughout life?
It really is. I mean, it was something that I already knew. Like, there's little nuggets that I've picked up along the way. Like, I know that our lived experiences filter, literally filter and shape our outlook on the world. Mm-hmm. Like our lived experiences dictate all of that. There's also, since we're in our Oprah bag, you know, Iyanla Van Zandt, there's a quote of hers that just kind of resurfaced and it's circulating about how people show us the ways in which they love. They show us the ways in which they are a friend, and then we choose whether or not we want to sign up to be an active participant in that love or in that friendship. Right. And so for me, that kind of goes hand in hand with this, with kind of shifting that like victimhood of it, because it's like, no, this wasn't specifically done to me.
Yeah.
But when I explore what happened to you, I see that you treat everyone like this. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so it makes me feel like less of a air quote, like target.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very interesting.
I want to talk about the word dysregulation, because that came up a lot, which is a poor ability to manage emotional responses. But the book speaks on the most powerful way to regulate is people's interaction. Mm-hmm. Connectedness counters unhealthy rewards such as, you know, drugs, alcohol, porn, and not to say all those things are negative, but usage of coming in a stressful space, using those things can be seen as harmful to you. So when you're having a trauma state, do you agree with that people interaction being a place of regulation for you?
Yes, I do. I've been so fortunate to foster community here where I feel like with my friends, I can lay my burdens down and I feel like I create a safe space for them to do the same. And it's been a journey, right? Because, you know, we all filter through different interactions and different friends, but I do feel like my friends feel like home to me here. And I think that accountability is great. And they also respect me. Like, I've been sober and I have not felt that pressure to drink and things like that.
Right
and
now, so, today?
Yeah, I started on March 6th.
Okay.
That's when I had my last drink. I will be honest, I did have a glass of wine on a date. So,
Jesus,
you know.
Turned the water into the wine.
Yeah, but I also know that doesn't set back my progress.
True.
It's like if you're working out and you have a cheeseburger, that doesn't erase everything that you've been in the gym,
exactly,
you know, doing.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I think that community and who you surround yourself with, it really does dictate how you navigate things and also how you deal with things. The minute you realize you don't want to deal with drama and chaos and fights, and if all of your friends, if that's how they do conflict resolution, you're going to be immersed in that whether you want to deal with it or not. So I think it's a conscious decision to make sure that you're surrounded by like-minded people and people who are equally invested in doing and being better people.
Yeah. I want to bring this up, and we don't need to dive into it, but Oprah spoke on a very interesting quote from Russell Brand, where he said that reality is my problem. Drugs and alcohol are my solution. And that just really set me back for a second. Like, I don't have an alcohol or drug addiction, but to be an extension of family, and everybody knows I'm from Kansas City because I say it often, but to actually kind of put something to it, with like, you know, uncles and aunties and, you know, different battles that I've seen growing up in family, that was just very poignant for me. But I also know another example that they were talking about in the book was the kid with the Old Spice.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
That was one of my favorite examples. So a truncated version is that this child was in an abusive family, right? His dad was abusing him. His dad was very violent, physical abuse. And so once he was removed from the house, I think from what I can remember, he was working with some therapists and he got better.
Yeah.
And so he was then placed in like a regular classroom, like everything, the behavioral problems were gone. Well, he had this teacher who was a male, a guy teacher, who he did not respond well to. This child started acting up again. He would withdraw. Like if the teacher tried to like hand him a piece of paper, this kid became withdrawn and almost combative. And basically, I mean, it's a long way around. Yeah. You all got to read the book.
You have to read it.
But basically, the end result was that Dr. Perry ended up discovering that the trigger for this child is that the teacher wore the exact same scent of Old Spice deodorant that his abusive father wore, that the child's abusive father wore.
Yeah.
So it spoke to how even those little triggers, and people talk about it all the time, right? We go home for the holidays, or like if Big Mama was in charge of the macaroni and cheese and she passed away 10 years ago.
Yes.
But you know, you smell that recipe and it takes you back.
It takes you somewhere.
Yes.
And so you respond.
But we talk about the good things that also has an inverse effect with certain triggers. Yeah. And so I thought that was fascinating because I never thought about it that way. Yeah. We always think about the happy things that things often remind us of. But there are things from our childhood. There are certain sights, certain smells, certain interactions, certain personality types
that
we either gravitate towards to. And that's how projection starts.
It can shift, too.
Right?
It
like if someone's energy. Like, I don't think she likes me. Or if someone, you know, we've had instances where people who you've never interacted with don't like you.
Oh yeah.
It's projections. It's, you know.
Hello, thanks for watching.
I'm just saying, but you know, it all goes back to childhood and some sort of lived experience and then projecting. Maybe you remind them of an aunt or an uncle or a teacher.
Something's got them to that point.
There's
where
something
they have
in the subconscious that's, yeah.
We've all painted stress to be negative, I feel like, but they challenge that in this book, actually saying stress is essential and a positive part of normal development. It's key to learning, mastering, and building resilience. When do you feel most stressed?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I feel most stressed. Most of my adult stress has come from, it's been financial stress.
Amen.
I'd venture to say I don't have social stress. I don't have dating stress. Well, I have some. But most of it has been like, okay, I'm in LA and how is A going to connect to B? And I need the money to make A connect to B.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that as I've gotten older, I just remain present, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. I've been challenging myself. That's part of my sobriety because I want all cylinders running, right? Mm-hmm. I want to work out. I want to have 8 hours of sleep. I want to have full meals. Mm. And I don't want to have to lean on, if I have a rough day, like that glass of red wine. Yeah. I just want to see in my adult life how I can function just as is.
Absolutely.
And so, it's just a matter of getting still and trusting, really having the faith that I have been carried and taken care of this entire time. So why then would God choose to fail me now?
Yeah.
Like just, you know, radically clinging to that belief that I will not be played.
We all, yes, please don't play me. we know that like emotions around us with people are very contagious.
Yeah.
You know, and I know, you know, cause you know, we've had conversations and we've engaged, but we can really sense those things. Right.
Yeah.
And I like to call it out and have the conversation, but the book talks about that. How do you protect your space?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a matter of just standing firm in my truth. And it's so interesting that you brought this up because I was looking for stories for a project I was doing.
Yeah.
And there was a Medium article that popped up about how certain mental and behavioral traits can be contagious.
Mm.
And they suggested like if all of your friends are depressed, there's only a matter of time before maybe that rubs off on you.
Mm.
So it's a matter of, I think just the ecosystem of these human interactions. I have my high moments and my low moments as do the people around me and making sure that everything feels reciprocal and making sure that they have the bandwidth to then support me and then the same in return. It's just literally an ecosystem.
That's so good that you said that because I know like when I am in a space, I put myself on the other end of the phone. I'm just like, I can imagine it sounding so nauseating hearing that. So then I choose.
Trauma response.
And so then I choose to just, you know, kind of just let me deal with that because it is contagious.
Yeah.
Do you feel like your self-worth was renewed through this book?
It definitely, I wouldn't say renewed, but it definitely helped propel. Last year when this book landed in my lap, I was in one of the most foreign, darkest places emotionally. And when I say foreign, it means I experienced something that I had never experienced before at the magnitude that I experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what this did was help provide understanding, and it certainly helped provide perspective and a little bit of grace to the person that I felt wronged by.
Because
it allowed me to zoom out and look at my stuff
and
look at his. And that's not making excuses for the people who harm us in any way. But I think that added perspective, like I mentioned earlier in this show, it kind of removed some of the tropes that I just automatically went to about what he did to me, to me. Because it's so much bigger than me, even though my feelings matter, but he does it to everyone type thing. Like when I zoomed out, like this has been a pattern. This is cyclical. And so I think it just provided additional. This book is like a textbook. We were talking about this. It's like a textbook, and it provided additional like a cerebral lens to, okay.
A refresher, as you
It didn't make me any less sad. I should mention that. I'm still very sad and very angry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely helped me zoom out and look at all of my interactions, really.
Do you see the question of what happened to you ever going mainstream?
In time.
Okay.
In time. The way Gen Z is working, child. In time.
Okay.
because I think that there's a good population of us. Things look doom and gloom, of course, in the world, but there's also a good population of us, and especially our peers and people younger than us, that are really leading these conversations in every space. Mm. And I think that, you know, that grace is essential, because we all are going to mess up. Mistakes are part of life. So you got to silence that inner critic. No one's perfect. We all have shortcomings. We all are going to misspeak, or we all are going to have an action or something that we say misinterpreted, no matter how clear our intentions are.
Yeah.
That is part of life.
Yeah.
And I think that that grace goes hand in hand. And if we remain open, if we remain teachable, and lower the ego, because they talk about that as well. They go take a deep dive into the ego. I don't know if you've gotten to those chapters. Mm-hmm. But I think that we can all hopefully work together and just provide, I hate the term safe spaces, but making the world a safer space, or making community a safer space, so that we can get to the other side of things.
Yeah. There's one thing that Dr. Perry would say, and this is nothing, but he would always be like, "Yeah, we're going to get to that later." I'm just like, get to it now. He says that a lot.
And we should mention this book. I was like, would this have been better in audio form? Because it's a conversation. The entire book is a conversation.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's dialogue. So.
And they have diagrams and stuff. Like it's like a textbook, you all. This is not like your typical, you know, self-help book, but it is good if you want to take a more scientific and, like I said, cerebral approach to mental health.
Yeah. This book also speaks about how often we punish the child who daydreams. And they say that daydreaming is a form of disassociation, and it can be a healthy coping mechanism. Was this you? Were you a daydreamer? Are you a daydreamer?
No, I'm not really a daydreamer. I think when I was younger, I could drift off. I know that I had a vivid imagination, but for the most part, I've been too involved child to daydream. Like, I be plugged in, okay? I was a nosy kid, you know, peeping above the crib and stuff. So daydreaming has never really, like, dominated my existence, but I have daydreamed before, of course.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for tapping in with me about this good old book here, okay? I feel like people should definitely check it out, What Happened to You, but I do, before you get out of here, I want to play a game with you. Is that cool?
Oh, yeah. I love games.
A little bit. Do you love games?
I do. Games like this.
Okay.
Like, don't be playing it like, if you ain't running game, don't have me sing and say my name in here.
Woo! Okay. It's got this or that, and we'll just like spit fire. We'll get through it.
Okay.
Okay. Napping or sleeping?
Sleeping.
Meditating or praying?
Praying.
Walking or running?
Walking.
Wine or cocktails?
Wine.
I mean, you're sober now, sorry. Dating or single?
Dating.
Destiny's Child or Beyonce?
Destiny's Child. Steak or unpopular opinion.
Steak or chicken?
Chicken.
Boobs or ass?
Ass.
Night in or night out?
Night in or night out? Night in, for sure.
Grapes or strawberries?
Grapes.
TV or radio?
Television.
Scandal or How to Get Away with Murder?
Ooh, you dirty for that. I gotta run with Olivia Pope, Scandal.
Thank you. Peace or patience?
Peace.
Love or money?
Money. Money.
The View or The Wendy Williams Show, pre all the drama.
Ugh, you're annoying for this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say The View.
Yeah. Wait, why?
I mean,
that was my last question. So why?
Well, The View, because The View has been in the game longer, so I'm more familiar with that. And The View, I mean, I love the Queen of Hot Topics, but I could do without some of those segments with the roo-la-la and the cooking and things like that. But I do love The View because it's that mix of perspectives, and sometimes I'm watching The View and I'm like, I never thought about it that way, you know, so I'm going to go with The View. Plus, I would love to be a panelist on The View.
Oh, wait, should we pitch this? Have you pitched this?
Yeah, I mean, it's in the universe.
Yes.
It's
on mic.
I would love to sit in and do I went to the show. I saw how the inner workings work. I'd love to fill in on The View one day, and then hopefully, you know, because it's not going away. That show will never be canceled.
It will never be canceled.
It'll never
They're
be canceled.
They're just going to replace the season. It'll
They're
be
just
going to
swap them out.
There you
go. You got to get the right mix of personalities.
And you miss Wendy? So yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you think she'll come back?
No.
Yeah.
She wants to come back, as we saw, but the Wendy Williams Show, Debmar Mercury has canceled it. So if she does come back, it's going to be in a different form.
A whole
form.
New platform, yeah.
Probably podcasting. Someone mentioned that she should probably go to Spotify.
She should probably do SiriusXM. They like her over there. I used to work there.
Yeah. So I think it'll be in that form. But as far as the Wendy Williams Show on Fox by Debmar Mercury, that is done.
Yeah.
Sherry Shepherd starting in September.
Are you excited about it? Are you excited?
I'm going to check it out. Because I kind of get a feel with how Sherry's going to run the show.
You know? But I don't know if I like her daily.
I was about to say, I don't know if that's appointment TV for me. I don't know if it's set the DVR type TV
right,
for me.
Right.
And so we're getting a feel of like she's totally chilled out with the hot topics. Mm. She does like two within that 20-minute segment and tells personal stories.
She does.
She's got gospel singers, mental health conversations, things that Wendy could never do if we're being
honest. The Sherry Show. Oh my gosh.
So we'll see.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. And we can't wait to see you.
Thank you for having me.
On The View. And you have a lot of work coming up this summer.
Oh my gosh, I do. It's a good season.
Yeah.
It's a good season. So I'm staying present in that because, you know, so often we stay present in the downtime when we're sad. So I'm staying present in the abundance.
She's
right
preaching,
now.
Y'all. Please.
And it feels
take her
good.
Mic. Take her mic.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Archie.
Thank
this
you.
Is like, what, my fourth or fifth time? Thanks. Mm-hmm. A different show, though. This is a different show.
No, thank
show.
You for coming here.
Of course.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Kill the cameras. What's up, family? Thanks so much for tapping into this episode. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube and Instagram and wherever you get your podcasts from for listening pleasure. Don't miss our weekly Millennial Conversations Pod Post Edition right here. My name is Archie J, and thanks for joining me today.